14 again, verses 25 to 33. This is the kind of text which a Lutheran will read and say, oh, I think I'll preach on the epistle. Or maybe even the Old Testament lesson. That's right. Heaven forbid, right? And it's interesting, there's some affinity here because I think a trivial or non-contextual reading of the Holy Gospel could make the words of Jesus seem just sort of like a trivial reading of the Proverbs lesson. That is, the Proverbs lesson has to be read in the context of the Yirat Yahweh, right? The fear of Yahweh. And so here too, I think the context is important. And I don't know too much about Luke, but I do think it's important, I've mentioned this before, in the travel narrative that begins at the end of chapter 9, okay, to whom is Jesus speaking? Because you got about 10 chapters here that are not completely teaching. It's not all words of Jesus in red, but it's pretty close to all words of Jesus in red. And I think it makes a difference as to the addressees as to how you'd interpret you know, what Jesus is saying. We'll kind of do some interpretation in a minute, but let's kind of just read here. Starting at Luke 14, verse 25, Luke writes, Sin poroianta de auto akloi poloi, and many crowds were going along with him. Auto is dative just because it's after sin poroiomai. So they're going along with him. The narrator, the evangelist, is telling us what's happening now. And straphes apen pros autus, and turning, or and he turned and said to them. We take this participle just as sort of attendant circumstances. It's from strepho, but it's the aorist passive participle. The stem becomes straph with an alpha. And the lexicon gives the meaning here for the passive of strepho as simply a reflexive meaning, to turn oneself. Okay, so it means, you know, if you want to be wooden about it, Jesus turned himself. He turned around. Okay, so they're following along, they're going with him, and Jesus turns around and says to them, verse 26, if anyone comes, here we have a present particular conditional sentence. Let's assume for the sake of argument, if a certain one comes to me, and he does not hate the father of himself and the mother and the woman, literally, wife here, because we're talking about family relationships, and the children and the brothers and the sisters, eti tekai, still even also. Bauer and Gingrich notices this combination and offers as a translation, and furthermore, okay? So he's got a series of things, you know, building probably in a sense to a climax, and his own life also, right? Or, and furthermore, and even his own psyche. Here's, I think, a good example where psyche doesn't mean soul as opposed to soul and body, but it means life, your own self. Udinatai enai mu mathetes. He is not able to be my disciple. And it's at this point that you decide to preach on the epistle lesson, right? a present particular condition, let's assume for the sake of argument that a certain person comes to me, and here, what is dialectical negation? Do you know what that is? What is that? I think I know what it is, but I can't describe it.
Kind of a form of hyperbole.
All right. So you overstate one thing in order to emphasize another.
Love X more than Y, you say, love X, hate Y.
Yeah, right. That's what we got here. The Lord of Love, as C.S. Lewis says in his book, The Four Loves, the Lord of Love is obviously not telling us here to nurse resentful feelings against our family members, right? Or to treat them spitefully, much as you'd like to do that with some of your family members. Or maybe some of the faculty here at Concordia Seminary, right? Right. Or both. So it's like you have to love me
more than you love them, a lot more. Okay? If you don't do that, u dinatai enai, he is not able to be, complementary infinitive thereafter, dinamai, to be the disciple of me. Verse 27, we'll just keep going and then come back. Hustis is a correlative pronoun, and it can be translated, and is probably here, whoever. Whoever u bastadze, whoever does not carry or pick up, this is a kind of a multi-purpose word. I think it's what the people do in John 10 when they're going to stone Jesus. They bastazo stones, they pick them up. Here probably just carry. The cross of his own cross, and come after me. He is not able to be my disciple. So Jesus repeats the refrain, but here he puts it in scandalously difficult terms, because to carry the cross to us is only metaphorical, right? Because we've never seen it happen. But Jesus' listeners were well aware of what it meant, what was happening when you were carrying a cross. You were on your way to the most painful, barbaric, and shameful death that had the sinful human race had been able to devise. So the grammar is not too hard here, but the theology is a little on the challenging side. I think the key, and this I think will be borne out in the following, it's sort of parabolic, it's not exactly it certainly isn't a story parable that follows in verse 28. But you remember in the pericope before this is the parable of the great feast, where, you know, those who are invited begin to make excuses. You know, I cannot come to the banquet, don't bother me now, I have bought me a wife, I have married a cow, you know that song? I have fields and commitments, they cost a pretty sum, pray have me excused, I cannot come. And the host gets really mad, and he says, oh yeah, well you go out and you force them to come in. I want my hall filled, right? And that's where that parable ends. Now, to the crowds who are not his disciples yet, they're following along with him, but they're not his disciples. To the crowds, it seems to me that what Jesus may be doing here is he just wants to make sure that nobody thinks that being a disciple is necessarily an easy thing. Or, more specifically, that it's even possible to come to Jesus and become a disciple with explicit upfront reservations. And I said it that way on purpose. Explicit upfront. Okay? In other words, if you, you know, come to Jesus of Nazareth and say, well, I want to be your disciple, but I'm going to let you know in advance that my parents are going to always be more important than you. You can't do that, right? Or if you come to Jesus and up front you say, okay, I want to be your disciple, but if I ever have to suffer, I'm not going to do it. Well, I'm sorry, you can't do that. You can't be his disciple on those terms. He will not accept it. See? You can only become Jesus' disciple if you allow him to set the agenda. Now you don't know in advance what the agenda might be. You don't know when or where or how you might be asked to bear a cross. You have to let him decide. But it seems to me that in itself is what it means to trust. And that we've always said anyway, that I become Jesus' disciple by trusting through faith, right? So, at least for me, and maybe I should stop and ask if this sort of makes sense, or if you're going to go ahead and call Christian News right away, that this sort of makes sense. This is the error, this is the mindset that Jesus is, against which Jesus is speaking. He's saying, you can't become my disciple if you think you can set the terms. You must let me set the terms. And you have to love. You can't say, I'm going to love my family more than I'm going to love you. You can't do that. See? Well, okay. That's sort of like, I'm a poor, helpless, miserable sinner, and all I know is that Jesus is my Savior, and that the Holy Spirit has brought me to the place that I believe, no matter what else is going to happen, he's the guy. You know? That's the attitude that Jesus is reflecting here.
Sounds to me like a church growth principle.
Which one is that?
You come in the door and
yeah?
You know what you're getting into.
Yeah.
Right. Are you ready to die?
Yeah.
You can't. You're not allowed in.
Yeah. Right. That's a good. Yeah. That's a good trait. Yeah. That's right. That's right. Those would be the people. Your church would grow with the people who would really want to be there, right? Yeah. Or else with a bunch of sickos, right? Yeah. Right. Right. So you know, following on the as it does on the heels of this parable, which you know, bring anybody in and force them to come in. Jesus says to the crowds, in a sense, he says, "Be careful here." And you know, it's interesting. Growing up, my parents are adult converts. They were converted in the early 1950s. And for their generation and in their time, one of the most popular ways of articulating the gospel in a sort of a popular, slangy sort of way, and I heard this growing up for a long time, was the gospel is you don't have to do anything. Now that only is gospel for a person who A, normally thinks that you do, and B, has tried really hard. Okay? In other words, that would be a gospel for a Luther, you know, who has tortured himself and worked harder than any human being has ever worked and still come up short. To that situation, that's gospel. But what about to a person in my generation? Or some of you people who apparently are, you know, you look younger every year, some of you people, right? Thank you. You know, these returning vicars think that you don't remember who they are. Wiegand. W-I-E-G-A-N-D. That's right. I want on his placement committee. That's right. Really, to a generation that's used to handouts and that hasn't ever worked hard for anything in their life and has never gone through the Great Depression and blah, 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 you go around saying to people, the gospel is you don't have to do anything. They'll say, cool. I'll just do whatever I bloody well please, you know. So, yeah, it sort of depends on the context, you know. So, anyway, I think that's kind of what Jesus is doing here. He's saying, look, to the crowds, you can't set the agenda. I set the agenda, see. And, of course, as we all know, his agenda is a gracious agenda. He suffers and dies and la-dee-da. But let's keep going because we're going to run out of time. Jesus hammers this home with the next verses. Now, this first construction is really an interesting one. It occurs a lot in Luke. Tis ex himon, skip three words, uchi. Okay? For who among you will not? It's the kind of construction that needs to be translated, and here I'm leaning on Ken Bailey, this terrific book, Poet and Peasant, and Through Peasant Eyes, you ought to buy it. You know, read, mark, learn, inwardly digest studies of Luke, and especially Luke in parables. It has the sense of, can you imagine that a person would ever do this? I mean, that's the sense of tis ex himon uch. Right? Can you imagine that a person would ever do this? Answer, no. Right? You know, this is a construction that expects a negative, an emphatic negative answer. Okay. And Bailey gives a number of examples, and I think he's dead right on this. So, tis ex himon, who among you, thelon. The referent here, the participle, is tis, and you have to ask yourself the question, because there's no definite article around, is this acting more in the attributive position or in predicate? And it's interesting, if you look down at the variant reading, some of the manuscripts wanted to throw a definite article in the front and make it clear. You see the variant reading, ha. Thelon, in which case you translate, who among you who wishes, right? And you can go that way, or you can go with a conditional participle, maybe, who among you if he wishes, or you could even go attendant circumstances. I think conditional works pretty well here, although I didn't check the translation, so we'll just go that way. Can you imagine a person among you, if he wishes a pyrgon oikodemesai, a tower to build, can you imagine a person who will not first, protos is an adjective, but the neuter singular accusative of adjectives can often act as an adverb, and that's what it's doing here. He first, after sitting down, kathizas, I had to work at pronouncing this word. In fact, I have to take my glasses off. Tsefidze, count, calculate, tain dapane, the cost. right? This is where this phrase comes from, counting the cost, right? Cost of discipleship, blah, blah, blah. That's a neat book, but it's a horrible confusion of law and gospel. Bonhoeffer, by the way. I hope I don't have any big Bonhoeffer fans here. If I do, too bad. Say fidze, count the cost. Now let's, this next indirect question, A, to be translated here, not if, but whether, all right, I think is sort of in apposition to cost, dapanin, whether he has eis apartismon, into completion, or for completion. Get it? Sense is pretty good. It's easy enough. Who sits down, who decides to build a building, a tower, without figuring out if he has enough to finish it? Who among you would do that? Nobody does that, right? Expected negative answer. You don't operate this way in the real world. Now, by the way, note that this is not a parable, at least in the way we normally think of parables. Clearly the word parable can apply to a different numbers, you know, different any different number of genre of saying. But normally we think of a parable as a little narrative, a little story that Jesus made up, and which requires, really, to be quite honest, decoding, like the parable of the sower or the wheat and the tares, where Jesus himself decodes and interprets every. See, this is not one of those. Rather, I would call this simply a comparison from typical human experience, because that's how Jesus speaks. He says, "Who can you imagine a person among you who would try to build without first figuring out how much it's going to cost to build?" So because it's an appeal to typical human experience, you don't want to overinterpret the parts, okay? This is just the way you do it. So you don't have to find a meaning for, you know, the tower doesn't have to be a sanctified Christian life, and to build doesn't have to be, you know, using the word in the sacraments or something like that. You know, don't do that with these kinds of comparisons. Just get the point. You don't do this, right? Well, let's go on and do it again. He doesn't do this, does he? Now you have to supply something at verse 29, like, no, he doesn't. Then, hina mepeta, so that lest. Now we have a genitive absolute. Thentas autu themelion, kai me ischiantas ektelezai. That's a double genitive absolute. See the two participles, thentas and me ischiantas, right? He doesn't do this lest, after he has put a foundation, and he is not strong to complete, literally, not able to complete it. Pantas hoi theuruntas, all the ones seeing, arxantai will begin. Here we have the subjunctive that matches the hina, right? This is the negative purpose clause. Lest they, all those who see, begin to mock him, 30, by saying, or just saying, one of these, you know, he answered saying, they mocked him saying, hati, quote, here's hati functioning as introducing direct discourse. Hutas anthropos, this man began to build, and he was not strong to complete. He was not able to. I mean, do you feel that way about the married student housing? I mean, is this appropriate? Right? You could preach in chapel on this, right? 31. Or a certain king, as he goes out, poroiomenai, omai is deponent, right? So we've got a present, middle passive, deponent participle here. Or a certain king, maybe we'll do it temporally, when he goes out, symbolo, to engage, encounter another king, and this probably means, it certainly means, ace polymon, to war, for war. Here's the negative again. Doesn't he sit down first and decide, buleuzetai, he will decide, now we have another indirect question introduced by A, whether he is able, endeka chiliazin, with 10,000s, to meet, hip antao, to meet the one with 20,000s coming against him. Pretty easy. I mean, you put the pieces together, they follow pretty clearly. Well, again, a king does this, doesn't he? The answer is, yeah, he does. Verse 32, e de mege. I'm so proud of myself, I remembered what that means.
You know, four words, eight letters, it means otherwise. At least that's what the lexicon says, and I always go with the lexicon, unless my theology makes me make up meanings for words. Otherwise, eti autu paro untas. Here we have another genitive absolute. Let's give it a temporal twist because of eti. While he is still far. Paro means far. Okay, paro. While he is still far, apostelos presbeion. He sends an embassy. A participle of attendant circumstances here, probably. He sends an embassy and asks, erota, the things for peace. Ta pras irene. Well, yeah, this is the way you do it, don't you? I mean, you're going out to war, and you got 10,000 troops, and you come around the corner, and you meet a guy with 20,000 troops. What do? You shuck and jive. You backpedal, right? You count the cost, right? Houtas un. Therefore, thus, pas ex himon, everyone from you, hus hu, uk ap atazita, who does not say goodbye to. And I think the translations often renounce. And you know, maybe in light of what I think theologically is going on here, you couldn't translate, but the sense is renounce the claim to, or renounce the right to. Pazen tois he autu hip arhusin. All the things of himself which are. Hip arho means to be or exist. Very commonly in the New Testament, the participle is substantized, the things which are, and it means possessions. Very common. So try it again. Who does not renounce all the things which he has, udinatai enamu mathetes. He is not able to be my disciple. So again, you can't be a disciple of Jesus on those terms. Jesus, I'm going to follow you, but if you ever ask me to give away some of my money, I'm not going to do it. So I don't want to say Jesus is talking about theoretically, you know, renouncing things, because then that waters it down. It's just like, who sets the terms here? The answer is, Jesus does. And you know, we as Christians, we say, well, that's right, as a matter of fact. You know, this is what it means to be a Christian. It's sort of harshly stated, but, you know, not something with which we are unfamiliar. Todd?
I was just going to say, you see this with Jewish people who become Christians today.
Okay, with Jewish people who become Christians. Yeah. Right.
So basically they can...
Yeah. So that when they become Christians, they say, I don't know what's going to happen. In a sense, it doesn't matter what's going
to
happen. Right, right, good. Okay, thank you, time's up. Notice how I cleverly left no time for questions.